Van van der Walt has been building WeBuy cars with his brother and his team since 2001. Well over two decades later, the company has named Chief Digital Officer Wynand Beerkes as Deputy CEO, a sign of intent around not just succession planning, but the importance of tech and data in the next chapter of the story. As always, you must do your own research, and please note that I do have a LON position. Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Stories podcast. I'm really lucky with what I get to do for a living because I get to speak to the people managing and building some of the most interesting businesses in South Africa. And one of my personal favorite growth stories of recent years has certainly been WeBuyCars. Anyone who has followed my writing for any length of time will know that I am a WeBuyCars shareholder. So let me just get that disclosure out of the way. I am also a dyed-in-the-wool petrol head, which may or may not have something to do with my WeBuyCars shareholding, but actually the truth of it is this is my only holding in the sector, and there are reasons for that. I do really like the business. So I'm so looking forward to this episode. It's based on an announcement that is really red hot off the press. So this is bringing you, you know, really up-to-date insights into what's going on at the company, and who better to chat to than CEO Faan van der Walt. And interestingly, hot off the press, incoming deputy CEO, that is Wynand Beerkes. Welcome to both of you, and I'm very excited to be doing this with you.
Thank you, Ghost. Nice chatting to you, and exciting times indeed.
Absolutely. So I think, Faan, let's start with you, and then we'll pull Wynand into this. So this is the classic journey for a founder CEO, right? At some point, you need to start handing your baby over into the capable hands of others, which I guess as a founder myself of something very, very, very small in comparison to what you've built, I can just imagine what that journey's like. And we've seen it play out before at other listed companies on the JSE. It's always lovely to follow these kind of stories and see what decisions get made around succession. And that's really what has happened here. So before we chat to Wynand, why don't you set the scene for us on, I guess, that succession journey for you and why you believe that Wynand is the right guy for the job?
It's been a question for decades in my head. What would the future look like beyond my tenure as CEO? And the announcement we're making is the appointment of Wynand as the deputy CEO for a period of time until myself and the board feel that the time is ripe to hand over the reins. And firstly, as an entrepreneur, and I've said this many times before, but the ultimate test of entrepreneurship or a founder-led business is to let go and the business maintain and grow beyond the tenure of the founder. So that's a goal of mine and my brother Dirk, who founded the business with us. And good examples are some of South Africa's successful businesses, Dis-Chem being an example, Capitec being an example, who managed to go through that. Internationally, you know, you got the likes of McDonald's. So tough to see WeBuyCars succeeds way into the future. So my role over time will change, but I will remain on the board and I'll definitely remain a shareholder. And I love being involved in the business. This is a proactive step in giving Wynand the opportunity to learn from me in more ways than what we've done so far. But we've already had a magnificent journey together. About 8 years ago, I struggled to convince Wynand to come and work at WeBuyCars. It wasn't easy because he's quite a demanding person and he wants to know what my vision was for this business. And I had to explain to him the growth and the future prospects of this business. And you know, ever since he's joined, he's developed a deep understanding of the business, the culture, which I rate as probably the most important thing in the business. But yeah, operationally, he specializes, you know, in technology and developing systems. And we've become more and more of a company that's dependent on that. So I'm excited about the journey ahead. Wynand has proven himself over and over again as someone who's got deep insights and also an entrepreneurial side. He loves experiments and he's always full of ideas. And with him around, I'm happy to go into the future with him at WeBuyCars.
So Faan, just for the benefit of listeners, that is not actually cell phone notifications happening there. That is your parrot. And your parrot has clearly learned precisely what cell phone and email notifications sound like. So kudos there to the official WeBuyCars parrot. I guess it talks about how many notifications are coming through all the time, not least of all from your digital man, Wynand, who will now be stepping into this deputy CEO role. And I want to get a proper understanding from him very shortly about what that digital world looks like. But a couple of things I just want to touch on from your answer there, Faan. So one, I can only imagine what it's like to have created a legacy brand that all your competitors also put on their window. That for me remains the funniest thing about WeBuyCars is that basically every dealer these days just writes, "WeBuyCars" on their window. Like, we also do. Come and speak to us. It's really really funny. I've personally always gotten a kick out of that. I can only imagine for you how funny it actually is. And of course, they're not always your competitors. Many of them are your customers, right? Actually, because you sell a lot into the trade.
You're correct. Yeah. We have a very strong dealer base or dealer network who source their stock from us. And it's been part of the journey from the beginning. When we started in 2001, the majority of the cars we sold were to dealers. And we grew relationships with dealers over the years. And today we have over 1,000 dealers who are registered and regular customers of We Buy Cars. So about a quarter of all the vehicles we sell are to the trade. And it's various dealerships, from the big OEMs all the way through to small dealerships dealing in the lower price ranges.
Yeah, that's something we're definitely going to touch on later. So, Vaynand, before we start chatting to you, just any disclosure from you around exotic animals that are going to make interesting sounds, or can we blame any odd sounds on your recording entirely on you?
Entirely on me.
Okay. Well, it's good to get that disclosure out the way. That's very important. So, Vaynand, it sounds like why Fawn chose you is because you came in and gave him a hard time and asked the tough questions. All jokes aside, that is actually, if you listen to podcasts of great founders globally, etc., they often talk about how much they value that. So I'm not surprised, actually. They're not looking for people to just come and blow smoke, literally. They're looking for people to come in and ask tough questions and how do we take this business forward and, you know, why should I be here? So well done to you. You obviously asked the right questions. And I think from my side as an investor, I like the fact that you're coming into this with a digital background. I think that counts for a lot, because I would imagine with taking the business from where it is today to where it can get to and what the future might hold, tech platforms, big data, machine learning, dare I say it, AI, that could be a big part of the future of the business, right? So maybe you can just give us a little bit of intro around how long you've been with the group. Let's maybe just start there, and then some of the tech capability that's been built and what actually makes you excited about the future.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having us. I must say I'm very honored to step in this role of Deputy CEO, and I'm genuinely excited about the opportunity to help lead this company to its next chapter. Having served as Chief Digital Officer since 2018, I've had the privilege of working closely with our executive team under the guidance of Fawn. Over the last 8 years, I started in 2018, but over the last 8 years, I had the privilege to be part of amazing information technology and data science team to build our proprietary digital business platform spanning across the business, and it serves as the backbone of our operations. Our platform integrates data, AI, and experimentation seamlessly across the business with a major focus on our data capabilities to evaluate the customer experience. I think that has laid a strong foundation for the future. I think as Deputy CEO, my focus will be on building on that momentum that we've built over the last 8 years since we've started with this digital transformation journey in We Buy Cars. And we'll focus on driving innovation, keep on unlocking operational efficiencies, one of Fawn's driving forces, and ensure that technology continues to serve as a catalyst for growth. At the same time, just want to deepen our commitment to the customer centricity across every part of the business. I think ultimately our ability to integrate digital thinking with commercial execution will be a major differentiator for us in the market going forward. You've mentioned all the buzzwords in the sector, technology, data, and AI, but that will continue. That's here to stay. We'll continue to adopt it, and that will sit at the center of how we scale the business going forward. Quite excited, nervous, but I look forward to working alongside the executive team, our employees, and all our partners to scale what we've already achieved and to steer the organization confidently through its next phase of growth. As we move forward, as a solid technology platform will continue to be a major driver for growth, helping us innovate faster, operate smarter, and hopefully deliver value at scale. Scale is the big play going forward.
Yeah, the nice thing with this business is you can quite easily see the reason why having better data actually makes a difference, right? It lets you buy better. It lets you understand. Got so many cars going through the system. I don't think that anyone has a better data set in the country about car values, buying habits, et cetera, than We Buy Cars. I mean, this has got to be the biggest data set, right?
Exactly. And it's a huge focus. And that was the beginning in 2018 when we made a decision to insource the digital business platform to build it ourselves in-house. And there was two principles based on that decision. The one was we wanted to be in control of the software, Firstly, we want to be agile, quick, and if we had to make changes, we had to be able to make it quick to adapt to market conditions. And the second thing is we wanted to be in control of the data and the quality of the data. So we had, when we started building a team up from the first people we employed, it's not just developers, but it was data people to walk the journey with us and make sure that our pipelines are, data pipelines are clean. And that's not all saying garbage in, garbage out. And we wanted to make sure that we get the data, we store the data, and we utilize data. I think the difficult thing about data is to operationalize data. Many companies has lots of data. The question is, how do you use that data to make decisions and quicker and faster and more accurate with the same number of people? It's a difficult question to answer for many companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is the question being asked right now of everyone. So it'll be fun to see how that plays out. Fawn, from your perspective, you've been doing this for over 2 decades now. So you've seen a fair bit in this industry, from very humble beginnings in this business to the monster that it is today. But I wonder if you've seen anything like what we've seen in the past couple of years with this influx of Chinese and, to a lesser extent, but still material, Indian brands that have suddenly won so much market share. I mean, I have found it absolutely fascinating to see how the legacy brands have been given a little bit of a hiding, let's be honest, by some of these competitors. I mean, it's looking pretty dire for some of these European names. And to be honest, you know, I said at the start of the show, dyed in the wool petrol head and a WeBuyCars shareholder, why do I not have shares in any of the other companies? And that's because, to be honest, I was very worried about what it would be like for them representing brands when things were changing so rapidly in the space. And kudos to them. They do seem to have done a pretty good job of navigating that in new car land. You guys are obviously operating only in used car land, you know, and please do stay there, because that's certainly, I think, a big part of the investment case, so don't be tempted. But Fawn, from your perspective, in terms of this Chinese influx and everything that's happened, I mean, you are right on the inside. You can see what's happened to car values, what the effect has had. I'd like to open the floor to you to maybe just walk us through, what have you seen in the last year or two? Have the legacy brands had accelerated depreciation? What has this meant for your business, especially in the latest period? Because I know it did have an impact in the latest numbers.
We have certainly seen an impact in recent months, but it's not something new. You know, the first time I encountered this was in 1996. So it's about 30 years ago when we saw that back in the day, you didn't get a Toyota Taz, you had a Toyota Conquest, and they were selling for just over 40,000 Rand in 1996. And then Toyota brought out the Taz, which was a more value-based one, only 4-speed. The Conquest was a 5-speed, and it really slammed the market for their competitors, the Mazdas and the Ford Lasers and so on. So that was my first encounter, because I sat with one of those.
That's such a fun memory. I was like basically just going into primary school. I remember my cousin got a Taz. It was a big deal. That's a great memory, actually. Yeah. Cars have changed a lot.
So I've had personal experience of taking some pain at points in time, but sometimes it works in your favor. Like we had just after COVID, then with the supply chain issues, used car inflation grew dramatically and vehicles actually went up in value. And it was a great period for us, because we could trade cars. Everyone had equity in their vehicles. It was really easy. And then the year after.
But it's like to be a nursery, right? Your stock grows in value every day. You don't even have to water it during inflation like that. It just goes up.
Yeah. So sometimes you have headwinds and sometimes you have tailwinds. So the year after, you know, when the new cars came in again, we saw that deflationary effect again. And we've seen some of that this year as well. And especially on the fairly new vehicles. Fortunately for us, you know, the average car we sell is about 9 to 10 years old. And when we do have these impacts, for instance, right now, we've seen accelerated depreciation, you know, on some of these legacy brands, where I was in a shopping center and there was a Jetour standing there for 480,000 Rand, brand new, being displayed. And I looked at our website and I saw that we've got a very similar one that's a year old that we are selling for 410,000. So that's about a 20% depreciation a year later and 25,000 kilometers later. So it's a normal depreciation that this vehicle goes through, because the moment you leave the floor, that's 10%. And usually you can calculate around 1% per month. So for us, you know, yeah, it did impact us over the financial year. We could certainly see in certain categories and price points that new car supply pushes down used pricing, and then you have margin pressure. So how do we handle that? Obviously, our model is built for velocity. So we have the luxury of being able to adjust our prices dynamically to market conditions. And that's exactly what we've done. So in areas where we saw that overlap, we could adjust and liquidate stock and utilize that funds in price ranges where it's not affected, and we could be more aggressive there.
Just saying velocity reminds me of those City Golfs. So I had a Corsa Light. I was more on that side of the fence than the City Golf Velocities. It was such a simple time in the world. There were like only a few new cars at a time, right? And they would come out and there would be one, like you say, the Toyota Taz or the Conquest or whatever. And it would be like, are you this one or that one? You know, is it Ford or VW? And now there's just this incredible number of options. Car culture has definitely changed. That's like my read on it for sure over the past couple of decades. And it's more competitive now. I don't think any of the legacy brands can really rest on their laurels at all. I mean, you've just used that perfect example of these Jitters. There it is with much the same depreciation curve that you're going to get on a new VW. You're not going to get a premium on the German car used. And I think what's interesting is you mentioned there the 9 to 10 year old average. And that's a big part of the business model, right? So not only are you built for velocity and basically getting the stuff out the door quickly, but you're also buying stock at a point where the rate of depreciation has slowed dramatically. I mean, would that be an accurate statement that that is definitely part of the business model?
Well, sometimes they start appreciating again. A typical good example would be the Nissan MP200, which is currently on an upward trend, especially the ones older than 5 years. So you cannot rely on book values at all. It's a mess when you look at book values, but it also creates a problem for insurers and banks who want to finance that, because the dealers, and us included, sell them way beyond what the book value would be, and they still go up on value. A year ago, we would sell a 6-7 year old Nissan MP200 typically for 110,000. But right now, the same car you would find on our floor for 125, 130. So yeah, it's true. They slow down depreciation, but they can also start appreciating
again. Yeah, the Nissan MP200, the Nokia 3310 of Bucky's right there. And people like to hate on buying new cars. And I always have these fights online. So the newest model car that I've personally ever owned is a 2015. And I bought it basically new at the time and then regretted it severely afterwards because it had electrical issues from day one. It's a sad story and not even an exciting brand. That was the worst part. I bought a sensible car. I think it was the only sensible car I've owned of the 20 plus cars I've owned in my life. So it just goes to show, hey, buy something pretty and then at least you'll be able to forgive it when it breaks. Anyway, that's just the problem with being a petrol head. But Vaynon, maybe back to you on how you see this play out in the inventory strategies, the buying strategies, etc. Again, I would imagine this is where the data makes a big difference, right? This is where you need to be monitoring depreciation curves. I'm guessing also stuff like hits on the website to try and gauge the demand for these vehicles. I can just imagine how much data you have to look at because such a big part of your business is online as well, right? And you can just measure so much.
Guys, to be honest, we collect data on every touchpoint with a customer. If you asked our vision a couple of years ago, it was, how do we own or control every touchpoint with the customer? And that statement just comes to the fact that we just want to collect data on every point. And we use that all as input to our data sets and to our pricing models to recalibrate and retrain these models to give input to pricing, to sales channel optimization, to inventory turn, to stock days, to stock mix in branches and provinces, for example. And all these factors, market analytics of all the listing platforms, we take all this into account to make sure that we get to accurate decisions for velocity. That's what we built for, and that's what the business is built on. And we have to use all this data from clicks on the website, views, number of checkouts of car keys, for example, number of test drives, everything gets taken into account. So we've got huge data sets. We're collecting many, many gigs of data on every day. And that's no small task to process all the data and operationalize that into your business. But I think we've done that well. And I think we've got a good foundation going forward.
Sorry, guys, you would find this one interesting. Vaynant also collects the data of which radio stations are in the presets of the car radios. And that helps inform where we do our radio advertising campaigns. So right now we are on over 30 radio stations, but sometimes you see a lot of cars coming in with certain radio stations tuned to, but we're not advertising yet. And it then shows you, hang on, a typical customer might listen to Metro FM, and then you'll approach them and start advertising there, which we recently did, by the way. So it's an interesting one.
It's clever data. I mean, this is like, we joke about it, but that's actually quite smart. And I think Vaynant, it's basically stalking at scale, right? It's understanding as much as you can about all your different types of customers across all your different regions and what they're interested in and what types of cars. Because it's a very personal thing. Much as car culture in my opinion, is not what it used to be, unfortunately, especially on the entry-level stuff. I think there was a time in the world where if you were an entry-level buyer, there were still a lot of different cars to choose from that said something about you. It does feel like everything's become a bit sanitized now. There's a lot of sameness, but still, you know, it helps to understand colors of cars that people like and all of that kind of thing. It's a big part of what you need to be doing. And the other area where I've seen a lot of this process coming through my own experience, having dealt with WeBuyCars just, you know, in day to day, is I remember a few years ago, if you sold to WeBuyCars, it always felt like it kind of depended who you got on the day a little bit. It wasn't necessarily the exact same process across the board. That was my experience, at least. And then my soon-to-be mother-in-law sold a vehicle to you guys a couple, probably about a year ago now, a year and a half. And I remember helping her with it. And I was super impressed because it was so process-driven. Like the buyer had a proper list of stuff that needed to happen. I thought to myself, okay, and actually picked up things on the car that I didn't even know about, you know, little paint issues there. Oh, maybe there had been something there. It was very, very impressive. It was definitely at least as good as selling a car to, you know, a supposedly premium new car dealer with a fancy showroom, if not more thorough. And that for me, I remember saying to him, which was probably the strangest comment he had received all week as your buyer. I remember saying to him, you know, like as an investor, this really pleases me as you sit here and like mark down this car. I'm not sure that it pleased my mother-in-law so much, but it definitely pleased me as a shareholder to see that level of thoroughness.
Yeah, guys, that's a very good point. If you turn back the clock to 2018, I think one of the biggest risks to the business was Fawn itself. If a bus drove over him, we were in big trouble. And because he understands vehicles and the market and the service so well and so good and has been doing it for so many years. And we had to get to a stage where how do we create at scale a repeatable process to be consistent, not just in Gauteng, but across the country as well. And that's exactly what you're referring to. So we've worked very hard on the buying process to get pricing, our pricing models correct and give a consistent customer and user experience across the board. Doesn't matter if you're selling a cheap 50,000 rand vehicle or a 2 million rand vehicle. We just want to make sure that we provide a excellent service to that customer at a fair market price and provide him a service and buy that car as quick as possible.
Yeah, basically it's fast, right? It's Fawn as a service. That's what you need to roll out across the entire business is a lot of people with Fawn's understanding of the market out there doing what Fawn has done to build this business up with the core team around him. So yep, that is the journey of a founder-led business, particularly a disruptor, particularly a business that I think is doing things differently, which is what WeBuyCars is. It's a disruptive force. It certainly has been a disruptive force in the market. People forget quickly. And I remember what it was like to have to sell a car on Gumtree. And then the bid offer spread on every sale was insane. You know, you were really lucky if you got offered a decent price on that car, especially if, in my case, I was usually selling a high mileage Alfa Romeo, which was, you know, sometimes easy and sometimes very hard. And then WeBuyCars came along and there was just this floor price put into the market of like, listen, you now don't actually need to accept a ridiculous trading offer because you're desperate, or, you know, those forced sales on Gumtree, or like, I'm immigrating, I desperately need to sell XYZ. I remember those days because I used to take advantage of them as often as possible. That's why I used to change my car more often, because the market was less efficient, bluntly. Whereas now, actually, so I can blame you for this, actually, the market is a lot more efficient. That bid offer spread has closed, those desperate sales. If you're immigrating, you can now drive your car to WeBuyCars. And as a result, I think other players in the market have been forced to start making more competitive offers when buying vehicles, right? I mean, that's surely something you've observed as well, is they've had to come to where you are, because that's just the reality. It's pretty easy for a consumer to cross shop and come and take the better offer.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the whole offering has really transformed the market for both consumers and dealers. I recently met a dealer, and in the past, dealers would say to me, oof, you've killed our market and etc. But the clever ones have caught on. And this specific dealer told me that since we've opened in Rustenburg, his business has started booming because he can now easily offer his clientele good trading offers. Because when someone wants to sell him a vehicle, he takes it to WeBuyCars, he gets a good price, and then he can decide whether he wants to keep the car or sell it to us. So the client gets a great deal and he gets to sell his car that he wants to sell. So quite often, you know, dealers are very brand conscious and brand specific, and they don't want to trade in different brands and what they would call contaminate their inventory with foreign or alien brands. And they would contact us directly, and they can rely on the prices we give. So it's been good, and it's become more reliable, it's more reputable. And what we also see is people tend to churn their cars quicker if they don't depreciate as much when they get good deals. So I would love to see cars churn more. That would really stimulate the industry, because the more deals we do, the more opportunity there is to make money. But also, getting a new car is an exciting part of your life. It's like going on a holiday. And we see people buy a car from us and bring it back 6 months, 12 months later, and buy something else. And it's not as if there's something wrong with the vehicle. It's just that they're happy to take 10 or 20,000 rand less for the vehicle now, once they've used it for a year, and buy something else, getting something more exciting or a little bit newer, lower mileage. They can make those upgrades or downgrades if needed far easier than before.
It's like buying and selling shares. If the costs are low, then people do it more often. The reason people don't buy and sell their homes very often is because transfer duty and estate agency fees are enormous. You know, those are the two extremes. Somewhere in the middle is buying and selling cars. And I guess the more efficient you can make that process using tech and other methods, then the more people will churn. I mean, this is human behavior. I tend to agree with that. Like, that's exactly the behavior that will happen. What is really interesting is when you speak to people in the market, and sometimes people make this cheeky joke, you know, it's called we buy cars, but are they selling cars? And then they're almost trying to look for ways to like dig holes in this business model. Unfortunately, success does tend to attract a bit of jealousy in the market and people getting angry and looking for issues. And, you know, that's just the reality of life, unfortunately. And the one thing that does often come up, and this is what I wanted to ask you about, is the perceived quality of the vehicle sometimes gets referenced by people who are, you know, looking for things to criticize. They point out, you know, are the DEKRA checks really that independent, for example? I've had my own experience looking at cars at We Buy Cars versus other dealers, which I'll share after you answer this question. But from your perspective, how do you protect the customers, and how do you respond to those perceptions around quality, you know, the relationship with DEKRA? And it's obviously very important, because at the end of the day, if you can't sell the cars, you're not going to be buying the next one. So, you know, when this stuff comes up and you see people making these comments, how do you tend to address them?
It's a great point. And we want to be as transparent as we can be and upfront about the condition of every car we sell. Now, taking into consideration that we serve the whole market, and the average age and kilometers of vehicles we buy and sell is 9 years, 140,000 kilometers. There will be cars that you'll have with issues. We really try and steer clear of cars that are unreliable, cars that could give problems, because it might break while we have it and then we sit with it.
So no more Land Rovers, Fon. I'm assuming no more Land Rovers are coming through the doors at We Buy Cars, right?
Look, Levinant can also elaborate that, but he implemented a loss avoidance strategy because of our data. We know certain vehicles sometimes even 40% of the time break. I'm not going to name and shame certain brands right now or certain make model combinations, but we just steer clear of those or offer very low prices so that we know if this car comes in, we can repair it and we can make sure and we can cover losses if there's an unhappy client afterwards. But those are few and far between, but the data does help. Regarding the DEKRA test, and what I did not like about the DEKRA test was that it's very technical. Even for me, I sometimes couldn't understand what the fault code is or what the explanation is on something that might be wrong with a car. So we've very recently launched a new brand, which is an in-house brand called Inspectify. What Inspectify does is it replaces the old DEKRA service or test, and we have it audited independently, because you don't want to get a situation where someone say you're writing your own exam or you're marking your own exam. So the independence of this brand is important to us. And I guess a time will tell whether we're getting it right, but it's a plain language, easy to understand for the average consumer, wording things like this is wrong or that is wrong or this might need attention. But going beyond that, also explaining what a service might cost or what ownership costs would be for a vehicle or even fuel consumption. We have a chat bot that Vinance developed on the website called Orange, that when you're purchasing a vehicle, you could ask it, I want to drive this vehicle from Joburg to Midrand every day. Could you tell me what fuel would cost me per month, and it can do that for you. So it's quite clever technology built in there, all in an effort to serve clients better. So it's always a work in progress. You know, the way you see WeBuyCars today is not the same it would be in 6 months' time. You know, people contact me and say, hey, you should improve this, you should improve that. And I say, yeah, we're busy with that. There's a whole pipeline of development that we are busy with.
Yeah, I mean, my tongue-in-cheek jokes about Land Rovers aside, Shane, my brother had the stereotypical Land Rover ownership experience, so I can make the joke. But there's actually a serious point behind it, and this is the experience that I wanted to share of why I feel good when I look at cars or we buy cars, honestly, is because you actually do have that level of disclosure. So we all know that some cars are more reliable than others without going brand by brand. It's obvious. You can go Google the stats. You can see for yourself. Reputations are what they are for a reason. There's a reason why people buy white Toyotas, and there's reasons why people take risks on red things from Italy sometimes or green things from Britain. And you've got to just understand what you're buying and why you're buying it. I think that's the overarching point. And that's what I've always liked about those reports is you understand what you're getting at the price point you're getting it. Because, you know, that car that I referenced earlier, that 2015 that I bought that was an absolute, you know what, straight out the box, it was a Kia. It was the one time in my life that I bought a sensible car and it was a Kia, and it was just a reputational disaster and just unforgivable. And so it just shows it doesn't matter which brand you buy. They are machines. They have lots and lots of different components. Something can go wrong. It is what it is. And I think if you've got the data, if you've got the clarity of the report, then that actually helps a lot. Because also my experience buying from supposedly really good dealers, and someone in my family had this experience very recently buying from a dealer up north, who I will not name. It was definitely not WeBuyCars. You buy something, you think it's fine, but you're not getting the detailed report that comes with it, and then the problems start. And now if you're lucky, the dealer will behave well, and maybe they will do what they are supposed to do by law and sort it out, et cetera, et cetera. But it's a fight. You might have bought that car from somewhere else in the country, depending what it is and where. It's just an unpleasant experience. Like, that's the one thing I really like with the WeBuyCars model. At least you know, day one, you're buying this thing. It has problems or it doesn't, but at least, you know, you've got the grading system. You can then budget accordingly for how much money do I need to spend on this thing or not. And so I guess that's part of it, right? It's actually just transparency. It's not about saying of the many, many, many thousands of cars we sell, every single one is perfect. No, that's not your business model. I guess your business model is to say you'll understand what you're buying. That's really the point, right?
100%. We've simplified that by grading it and indicating which cars do we deem as roadworthy and ready to use versus something that take a note of point X, Y, Z, which could be as simple as, listen, it needs a set of tires and windscreen wipers, to a more serious thing like an oil leak that could range in cost of repair. But it's all disclosed there. A next step for us would be to also help the customer in understanding how much it would cost to repair those repairs, which is something we hope to implement in the year to come.
Fine, that certainly does sound very interesting. I can imagine a world in which you can say to your customer, you know, estimated cost to fix. I like that. I can kind of already see the partnerships coming through of who might be fixing it and what the economics of that might look like. So again, the shareholder in me is quite pleased to hear that. I'm going to flick back to Vaynant now, because as we talk about the economics of the business and value-added stuff, like, that's just a hypothetical example for now, at least, you know, what would it cost to fix? There are other value-added things that you're doing in the business that are happening today, and that's stuff like financing, for example, and other things. The scale that WeBuyCars has achieved now, you are an incredible distribution arm for products. I mean, I literally looked at, you know, Easy Equities Purple Group this past week, and I spoke to the CEO there, Charles Savage, and talked about how strong that business is now from a distribution perspective. They have over 1 million active accounts. They're like this dripping roast for financial services product providers wanting to get to their user base. And I can mention them here. Of course, they don't compete with you in the slightest, but I almost see similarities. You know, you're both disruptors. I'm a shareholder in both for actually very similar reasons. And if I look at your business now, this huge number of cars going through the system, again, very strong distribution, understanding of your customers, that becomes a really powerful distribution type business. So Vaynant, from your perspective, and I guess the data ties in here beautifully as well, what is that second gross opportunity? As I understand, they call it in the industry, if I'm getting that wrong, tell me, but it's the opportunity for car dealers to make more than just the initial gross margin, you know, the basic, I bought a car for 100, I sold it for 110. What do all those other opportunities look like, and how are you responding to them?
Yeah, so guys, that's a very significant line on our income statement is our second gross, and it's all about the distribution. Like you mentioned, we finance about 20% of our vehicles, of our total full stock holding per month, and that's just north of about 2,700 vehicles per month we finance. And then we get income from the banks on that. They call it a variable incentive commission and a dealer incentive commission for every finance transaction. So that has a great impact on our income statement this year. We grew that by 14.5% in FY25, which we're very proud of. And on top of that, finance deals around 2,700 a month on average. We sell product as well. We average around just over three products per every finance deal. If you're talking about opportunities in We Buy Cars and how to grow that second gross income line, as we document or well documented, we aiming to do around 23,000 vehicles by FY28. And if we maintain that 20% penetration on finance deals, our second gross line will be significant in 2028. So very excited about that. And we do a lot of work to make sure that we get financeable vehicles as one of our big sales channels. And we use data for that. How do we use our models to get the probability of finance? Because we've got different roads of channels to the floor for a vehicle. And we use probabilities. We see this is a very good financeable vehicle and we want it on the floor. We'll channel that vehicle to the floor rather than sell it on auction, for example, because that gives you the opportunity to get second gross income and sell more product. So we keep a close eye on that and we will monitor that and grow that with the business as we scale.
Yeah, fantastic. It really is interesting. Fine, I think let's talk about the expansion of the trading space, because at the end of the day, you need space to sell cars and get your second gross and all these other wonderful things. We Buy Cars very much started in busy urban areas, which makes a lot of sense. And I think you found a lot of interesting ways to grow into more outlying areas. You've got those buying pods, you've got other innovations. You've built out a national footprint in quite small towns as well. And for a business built for churn, that's why I guess you've got to be where the people are. And then you've got to be careful when you expand beyond that, that you don't go and build out space that, you know, doesn't achieve the throughput that you need it to achieve. So from your perspective, and especially since you've been there since literally the beginning, how has that CapEx, expansion CapEx thinking changed over time? What are some of the typical things that you consider now when you are adding space to your business?
It's a great topic, and we talk about this a lot internally. We don't use specialists to tell us, ooh, you got to go and open a branch in Kimberley. By the way, I'm thinking of it. I was there over the weekend and it's a very lively town. We look at various things, you know, the sourcing potential, the logistics efficiency. We didn't have a pod in Springbok for a long while because it's terrible to get cars from there to the nearest supermarket. We do clever things like we look at when we rolled out our pods nationally, we look at where all the Toyota dealerships were, because that's a very good indicator of enough economic activity to sell Toyotas there. And that means there's used vehicles there and we'd love to buy them. The business has got it's like a two-sided coin. You've got the buying side and the selling side. So buying we do all over the country. And that's mainly by placing buying pods in strategic locations all over, so that when whoever wants to sell their vehicle can have the service straight away. And then when it comes to the bigger warehouses, we have smaller ones and bigger ones. Most recently, we opened Rustenburg in October last year, doing really well, selling on average 400 plus cars a month. More recently, we opened the Vereeniging branch a few months ago, and that really surprised me, you know, the demand and how well it did since inception. And then looking forward, we still this year are going to open two really big supermarkets, one being in Lansdowne in Cape Town and the other being in Montana, Pretoria North. Now, these branches are mega branches. They will both probably be our second biggest next to the Dome. And those are in the big metros. So we believe there's still a lot of growth for us to be had in the big metros. We're not veering into the more rural areas because we feel saturated in the big provinces. No, not at all. For us, these two big branches, you know, generate space that's desperately needed. And it'll help us to just sell more stock where they are needed. But that said, we're also looking at Witbank or in Malahleni. We'll open there probably February, March. Also sizable, enough space for around 500 cars. So could potentially sell 500 cars. So yeah, slowly but surely we're expanding the footprint. I would have loved to have been able to open one of these two big branches earlier this year, it certainly would have helped us, because we're buying cars at such a pace that our stock levels, you know, went over 100%, which also influence your pricing decisions. It's a disciplined process going through that. We don't just open because we are cost conscious. You know, we're looking for the right deals in the right places. By way of example, Bloemfontein, you know, I've been wanting to open in Bloem for 2 years now. We are getting there, but we just haven't found the right deal because we are cost conscious when it comes to how much it's going to cost per vehicle you're selling there. We'd love to sit at below 1,000 rand a vehicle in some of the most expensive locations. We north of 1,500, but we'd rather veer away from going into a very costly lease just for the sake of having the footprint. It's got to make sense and pay its way.
Fon, I heard you say Rustenburg there a year ago, which means that you basically called the Platinum cycle, which is incredible because no one knew when Platinum was going to start rallying and you called it, you opened in Rustenburg. Is this what's happening here? Is Vaynant being set up to take over from you so that you can go and run Platinum mines and try and get the Platinum cycle right? Is that what's next?
No, just look at where we are opening and just look what industries are there and just you back them and you're going to become filthy rich.
There we go. He makes it sound so easy, Vaynant. Does he always make everything sound so easy? CapEx included.
I think just what I add on to what Fon has been saying, apart from the selling opportunities with expanding your footprint, that enhances and elevates our buying process of buying as well. As soon as you put down a warehouse in some location, you just buy more vehicles there as well. It's a great billboard. We're looking forward to Montana and Lansdowne opening and looking forward to how many cars we're going to buy there as well. Consumers like going to the warehouses and sell their vehicles. So yeah, we're very, very excited about that coming at the end of the year.
Yeah, like one of the great learnings there for me was just splitting the buying and the selling. I think that's so clever. If there's a Toyota dealer, there's enough activity, there'll be cars for us to buy, even if we can sell them somewhere else. Very cool. That leads nicely into the last question that I wanted to ask you. It's a fun one. It's very much based on of my two best mates in this world, both are car guys. That's essentially how we all met, really. And one of them at one point sold a We Buy Cars, this beautiful classic Jaguar. And I was genuinely astounded at the price he got from We Buy Cars for this Jag. I thought to myself, wow, okay, good luck, We Buy Cars. I'm not so sure this is going to go. And it made me wonder, on a serious note though, do you try, like, is the business model that absolutely every single car has to make a set profit? Or do you have exceptions where you say, hang on, actually, having a 1950-something Jaguar in the entrance of this large supermarket kind of gives a pretty interesting impression as people walk in. Because I have noticed, maybe I'm speaking for the one near where I live, which is the Richmond branch. Every time I go there, I get to see this row of just very nice cars near the door. It feels like the pretty stuff is in front. It doesn't feel like an accident. So I guess as actually a fun question to finish, I really wanted to understand, is there a prettiness factor in the pricing model?
Well, look... It is deliberate. We certainly love interesting cars, you know, but yeah, we're still a disciplined business. So every car needs to make commercial sense too. But that said, unique cars do add energy to the floor and it does create a destination experience, especially in upmarket areas. People love walking the floors with their family, you know, so it has to be interesting. So no, we won't overpay for them, but you might not make the same profit than you would do on a quick turner. So some of these take long to sell, but I love them. I love old cars. I've got my own collection as well. So it's not done purely for decoration.
No, I can believe it's a bit of both. That was kind of my expectation, was there was an element of, even if you just break even on that one, the fact that so many people would walk in and look at it and talk about it and take a photo of it. And wow, do you know, I saw this thing at We Buy Cars and it was so nice. It does actually help with the brand. So I think it is the right play. I think that's about as much time as we have for this discussion. It's really been super fun. Fon, Vaynant, thank you so much for your time. I've really enjoyed it. I remain a happy shareholder. I know that the latest results, you know, the market's had some views on digging into the numbers and go and take a look. But for me personally, I think the strategy is still very sound. Businesses don't go up in a straight line every single year at exactly the same percentage on exactly every item on the income statement. The only way you'll ever believe that is if you've never run a business yourself. It's been an incredibly impressive story to build We Buy Cars the way that you have. So all the best for the coming year, 2026. I hope to do another one of these with you at some point. And thank you for making time for the Ghost Mail audience on this podcast.
Thank you, Ghost. Great speaking to you.
Thank you, Ghost. It was an honor. Thanks.